Good evening, folks. Or late afternoon, if you're listening live, or good morning, good evening, if you're listening to the podcast archive later on. This is the last Radio Edge Talk from the e-assessment 2012 conference from Dundee. And I'm finally joined by David Walker and Derek Robertson, and at last, David Noble. Who I've been looking forward to. We're just currying around the mic. We've been talking about Scottish words for the last minute. I'm just going to ask David and Derek to introduce themselves, and then we'll take it from there, talking a wee bit about what's been going on here today. David, do you want to kick off?
Sure. My name's Dr. David Walker. I'm from the University of Dundee, and along with my friend and colleague Kenji Lam, I'm the organiser of today's conference, e-assessment Scotland. We bring this to everyone free of charge. It's in our fourth year, and we're really happy to have EduTalk here today, broadcasting live from the event. It's fantastic.
My name's Derek Robertson. I work with Education Scotland as a national advisor for emerging technologies and learning, and I was asked along today to introduce one of the keynotes. And I've been at the e-assessment conference now, I think, for the past 3 years. I did a keynote a couple of years back about e-assessment through games. So, yes, I've been here today. And really interesting.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things, to tell you the truth, I hadn't heard of this over the last 3 years. I'm, say, a primary school teacher interested in technology. And we had Kenji Lam on earlier on Radio Edge Talk a few months ago, and he invited us here. And what's been amazing to me is how many... a lot of the stuff today is obviously about higher ed, and it's just chimed with me all the way about the sort of moves in assessment in the primary school, the tools that you're using online. As a long-term sort of fan of blogging and podcasting, there's been a lot of people talking around the open space. It's been a kind of fascinating day. David?
Yeah, I'm still actually settling into the event because of my first impressions, because I got here so late, but it's been fantastic, and congratulations to all the people involved in organising today, and great to see, you know, international speakers as well, and we had a guest during the week there from Education Scotland, Alex Duff. Mm-hmm. It was sort of fantastic to see. I know we're talking about parallels between higher ed and FE in schools, but that's kind of, I suppose that's exemplified by Alex Duff, I suppose, on behalf of Education Scotland, winning the award for the e-portfolios and the student profiles with primary seven pupils. Some fantastic numbers getting thrown about there in terms of how it's managed to ideas embedding itself through. I think it's going to be led off with the Building the Curriculum 5 document.
Yes, it's something that we've profiling in B7 SME. Yeah.
One of the main events, one of the main aims of this event that we've, you know, underpinning our reason for running e-assessment Scotland, was actually to bring together all the sectors of education. When we launched e-assessment Scotland 4 years ago, we very deliberately wanted to attract teachers, we wanted to attract people from the college sector and HE as well. We very much don't want it to be an HE focused event, and today on the programme we've had speakers from Education Scotland, we've had pupils from Ardler Primary in Dundee who were superb, I have to say. We've also had college lecturers, Angus College. We've had speakers from down in England. We've had speakers from as far away as Australia today with, as you say, an international speaker in Professor David Bowd from the University of Technology, Sydney, which really reflects the reputation that this conference has began to develop. One of the reasons we really introduced this was because we really feel the need to share good practice in assessment and feedback across the sector. But many of these events are quite expensive now to attend, and there was nothing really out there that was cross-sectoral and free to attend, and we really saw this as a niche in the market, and we think that we want to increase the contributions from people in all the other sectors. We don't want it to be totally HE dominated, and I think we're achieving that now, and it's reflected in the delegates today. There's been a lot of students here, there's been a lot of college lecturers, and hopefully we can attract more teachers in the years ahead as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see colleagues getting out to come to something like this, and I think we seem to be just almost scratching the surface of moving from what David talked about as being feedback zero through feedback one to feedback two, and what they're being comforted in a wee bit as a primary school teacher, as I think we're not lagging behind. There's not a big difference. There's not where everybody's just struggling to start moving towards this sort of more difficult types of assessment, getting students to reflect.
I think assessment and feedback is a challenge across all sectors, and it's a perennial problem. The concepts that David talked about today was about sustainability of feedback, and I think that's something that we particularly in higher education have to look at more, the involvement of students in the assessment process, greater levels of peer assessment. I think that chimes well with many people. We obviously have challenges with the logistics of the numbers of students, etc. But we need to work hard with our academic staff, and I think probably in the schools as well, to increase awareness of the range of techniques that's available for providing feedback to students, and trying to implement some of this best practice that we know is out there. We're aware of what might work, but do we actually do that in practice? So it's been a really rich conference today. I think many people have commented on how inspired they've been by some of the things they've learned, and there's been lots of practical advice given. I think that's important in a conference, that you get something that you can take home and actually implement yourselves. There's too many events you go to and there's a lot of discussion, it's all very nice, but can you actually go and do anything with it? And the feedback today has been, yeah, I can go back and I can do audio recordings for feedback. I'm going to change the structure of my module or degree programme so that students have the opportunity to apply the feedback that they've received. That's so encouraging, that's so great to hear, that we will actually make a difference as a result of today.
I would also like to say that one of the concerns I had is that we always, as educators, maybe as teachers, is that assessment is what we do. You know, that the learners are dependent on us to be assessed. And it's, so it's always an external thing. And when I did the keynote that I gave a while back, and kind of informed a lot of talks I give about the use of games in learning, and I kind of hesitate to use the term game-based learning now. I think it's an unhelpful term. I think it's nothing more than good teaching and learning with good resources by good teachers. But what we continually see is that independent of adult intervention, young people as young as 4 and 5 and 6 years old can work in Moshi Monsters, they can work with Nintendogs, they can use the facilities within these games environments to be able to identify aspects of their performance in these games that need to be improved. And there are facilities within these games that allow them to do that, and they know how to use them. They can self-reflect, and they can pinpoint where the development needs are, and they can use the tools in order to do that. And it makes me wonder, why then do we not kind of exploit that more than maybe we have done? I don't know what you guys feel about that, whether you see that in these kind of digital contexts that young people choose to situate themselves in. And what is it about the social actor role of the teacher that they feel they maybe need to always intervene and to do the assessment bit? What can we learn from how young people self-assess and do it naturally?
Maybe you've got to look at then, because one of the things I think we struggle with in the classroom, and it sounds very much like you struggle in higher education with, is getting children to reflect. But maybe it's not getting them to reflect, maybe it's getting them to use the language that we understand as reflective. I don't know if there's something in there.
I think it comes down to how we frame things, and I think that social, how we frame things. And so when children are choosing something that's in their cultural domain, as I've said in the past, within their cultural framework of reference, it's something that's not alien to them, it's something that's not being imposed on them. And that the point I'm making is that children can do it. They can do this. They can self-reflect and they can make change and they can help themselves go forward as a learner.
I don't want to put you in the spot, Derek, and I maybe don't have too many assumptions here, but did they take some kind of frustration with some of the ways that we're going about self-evaluation or encouraging youngsters maybe to reflect in ways that we go about our own professional reflection, but as people who have gone through degree programmes and masters, that maybe the language or the structure should not be the same, but possibly within some of the structures in schools we're asking pupils to reflect in ways that are not appropriate for their age and stage, for want of a better phrase.
Don't have it's frustration. I think what we need to do though is, I don't think we've taken cognizance of how our young people engage the worlds that young people involve themselves in digitally and how they perform. For instance, I give one of my presentations recently, I do a bit about how well do we know the cultural domains in which our young people live, and I show 5 images of well-known games characters, and they range from Super Princess Peach to Sackboy to Notch, who wrote Minecraft. And when I show it to teachers and to adults, generally you might get one or two people who might know one or two, but they don't know who these people are. And whereas if I do that with school children, they're going to get almost every one of them. You know, but I know, but the point is again that within that world, it's not superficial. It's not something that's just a bit of time-wasting brain rot. You know, there's something really rich happening in these worlds. People are going to YouTube to learn how to build in Minecraft. And you look at those tutorial videos, they're hitting 8 to 10 million hits. You know, young people are going on, how do you get that around that new course in Mario Kart? And so Mario Kart, sorry, and they're building their own videos, as we saw today with Russell Stannard showing, which is a simple technique, you know, but there's something about the visual nature of feedback tools and assessment tools. But young people are building them, and I mentioned the young girl that's one of the things we've been doing. I run a thing called CPD Consularium. I'll stop talking in a minute. CPD Consularium through Glow, and you can loan equipment from us, digital equipment, provided you agree to share your experience in our wiki within Glow. And one of the teachers that loaned Moshi Monster from Nintendo DS built a Moshi Monster world in the grounds of the school. This was P1, and so they had QR codes which were linking back to their Glow wiki where they had their animated Moshi Monster. So all that was going, but they have made their own videos to help others find Moshlings in the game. So these five-year-old kids have made their videos, demoed how to actually to do this. And so for me, that's clear example of like self-regulation, self-determination, self-assessment, and taking these things forward. All I'm saying is I think that we need to take more cognizance of how young people can do this in their own cultural context.
I would agree with what Derek's saying, is that there certainly is a culture of underestimating the abilities of students. And I think it's Sir Ken Robinson who says, you know, there's not an argument for ever lowering standards. It's absolutely true that we never set the bar quite high enough. Christina Costa, our third keynote speaker here today at the conference, said, you know, we all believe in democracy, but we don't actually practice it necessarily in our classrooms and courses. You know, we make things compulsory. We don't, you know, let students have choice necessarily. We talk about learner self-regulation, but then we say you must do this, you must do that. We will implement these criteria. And what Derek says about the language and the context is so important. And much of the work we're doing at Dundee that's looking at degree programmes and the assessment and feedback strategies used, it tells us that students are struggling with the language of assessment, language of criteria, the language of the feedback given. Is it positive and pointless? You know, is it negative? Is it overly destructive rather than constructive? And it's something that we as educators really need to start paying attention to. We need to make our assessments accessible to our students. We need to set the benchmark high so that they can aspire to achieve these. And, you know, we shouldn't necessarily keep putting restraints in place that are really for the benefit of us as the tutor or the teacher. We need to give more choice. We need to trust their ability to make decisions. But that has to be scaffolded, obviously, and change depending on the task. But I think Derek's right. I think we underestimate many of our pupils and our students.
David, in a year we are in a country not too far from our own, a qualification of podcasting has actually been abolished due to being, in the tabloid press, being accused as being kind of wishy-washy and not having much currency. Nonetheless, at today's conference, there seems to still be very much a place for raw audio or raw verbal kind of feedback or self-assessment, whether that's tele podcasting or just simple audio files. And do you agree that there's still scope for encouraging learners to use audio types of feedback with their tutors, or is it still an area that's somewhat unexplored or unresearched?
It's an area that there is a growing body of research. Professor Graham Gibbs, who's from University of Oxford, he's been doing some work down in Leeds actually, and he's shown that students are highly appreciative of audio feedback. But he says that the misconception that many academics have is that the students are looking for something polished and, you know, well constructed, but the students are quite happy with quick and dirty. They want this personalised element, the human element of their teacher looking at their work, providing them some useful feedback fairly quick. They don't mind a few coughs, ums and ahs, but they want it back fairly quickly. And certainly there's research done at Aston University as well, which has shown that feedback that shows the work on the screen as well as the audio comments is really valued by students. So there's a growing body of research that shows that this is actually very, very valuable, hugely beneficial. I think we heard today in a few of the sessions that it can be quite time consuming. Some research done by York St John University showed that it took some of their tutors an additional 10 minutes per script to provide the sort of on-screen marking and audio comments. Now, is that just because they were new to these processes? Would they get more efficient at it? That still has to be ironed out and still has to be found. But I think we will find that the pressure for on-screen marking, e-submission, audio feedback is only going to grow. And technology will simplify that. We've heard today about lots of tools, Vocaroo, Audioboo, Jing, that can help us provide that. They're so easy to use now. There really isn't a technical reason for people not being able to do this.
We also, in terms of e-assessment or assessment, through my colleagues in Education Scotland who were at an inspection at Ormiston Primary School in East Lothian, they saw what the school had done there, and they now no longer use report cards at the end of the year. And what they have is they have a learning journey. So over the course of the year, they have a colour-coded book in which the learner and the teacher, they put in stickers that then exemplifies how the E's and O's in Curriculum for Excellence are being addressed. They then have QR codes which can be scanned and can go straight to an online bank where there's evidence of their work. Now, when I interviewed some of these children for feedback, there was a chat with one young boy who was a P6 pupil, and he said to me, very confident young man, he said, if you think about it, if I get a comment in a report card and it's just a comment, that's all it is, it's quite superficial. But if you get a link to a piece of audio or a video that you can link from a QR code, it allows me to then show something in much more depth and detail. Now, I think when you hear P6 pupils talking about the richness of digital tools and how that can impact in such a favourable manner on them as a learner, and how it can convey what they've learned to outside interested parties, that for me is extremely rich and the kind of thing we should be promoting.
Students and pupils have a much deeper insight to the assessment and the learning process than I think we ever estimate, and I think we need to work with them and engage with them more in these processes so that we can further that understanding. And I think it's about partnerships. We've heard a lot about that today, about teachers and students and pupils working together in partnership, and I think that's exactly what we need to do more of.
Because there is a difference between a report card that maybe a teacher can select from a bank of phrases.
Absolutely.
That can come home to mum and dad. You know, when you hear that young man talking about his learning journey book, there's a difference.
So it's that difference we're really looking for. I think, given the hour, we're going to wrap it up here now. I'd just like, on a personal note, David, I believe you were having an awful lot to do organising today. Obviously, with Kenji and numerous other people. When I was coming here today, I was thinking e-assessment, higher education, it's going to be some sort of grind mill of automatic marking and something that I'm not very comfortable with, and I've just been completely enlightened. It's been a great day. I didn't think I've heard anybody saying anything that I didn't think was really interesting. So thank you very much. Thanks for talking now, and thanks for letting us come here and have fun.
It's a pleasure. I hope everyone has enjoyed the day, and you know, thank you to all the speakers who contributed to your show throughout the day, and hopefully many of you will be able to join us here in Dundee in 2013 for our fifth conference, which we hope will be our biggest and best yet.
And just finally, David, you know, if people are listening to this audio and they're involved in 3-18 education, maybe they haven't known about the existence of this conference or the association itself, you know, how can they get further information and get involved?
Certainly you can follow us on Twitter, it's at ESS Scotland, and certainly we have a website, it's e-assessment-scotland.org. We will be accepting proposals early in the new year, and we certainly will expect many submissions from that centre that you talk of, and we would really encourage it.
Okay, thanks very much, folks, and we'll say good night and go and have a wee glass of wine, I think.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.